Welcome, listeners. I hope you've had a fantastic day, or if it's the start of your day, may your chores be done swiftly and your day be full of excitement. And speaking of excitement, I have another episode of Michi's Journey just for you. Part 3 of this ongoing series by Carl Brandt. And a special thank you, of course, to you, Carl Brandt, for sending this one through. So, turn your lights off, the sound up, and get ready for something different. Michi's Journey, Part 3. My team arrived a little after the Hyakume left, but the little eyes crawling over the temple never disappeared. My team and I worked through the day, and a little into the dusk. After all, they only had a week to preserve as many of these books and scrolls. Jane was by far the prettiest girl in our group, and you could say all the guys were infatuated with her. She didn't seem to take notice, though. On the walk back, Jane walked up to me and looked over me carefully, before making a generalized statement. "I've never noticed you had a small patch of white hair." I waved my hand in dismissal. "It's okay, I forget about it myself sometimes." I tried playing that off as a joke. I didn't want my team to know what it could actually be. Jane quipped this time, nudging her elbow into my ribs. "Got some Marie Antoinette syndrome? What did you see? A ghost? And the fright turned you white?" She giggled at her own joke and rhyme. Just then, something caught my eye. It was a woman in a window on the third story. Her pale skin and contrasting long raven black hair made her stand out. She was resting on her elbows, absent-mindedly staring at the landscape. One of her eyes was visible, as the other sat behind her hair like it was a curtain, and that eye fell upon me, just as a chill shot down my spine. I decided not to look up at her, as I turned my attention back to Jane, who saw the goosebumps forming on my arms.
"You cold?"
she asked, concerned for a minute. "Yeah, just got a chill is all." I was trying too hard to seem normal and it came off awkwardly. "Sorry, I'm not feeling so good right now, Jane," I stammered out as we arrived at the hotel. "I think I'm going to go and just lay down for the night." Jane's concerned look said she suspected something but didn't want to intrude.
"If you feel better later, the whole team is going to the karaoke bar till it closes. I hope to see you there."
With that, we parted ways and headed to our separate rooms. As I entered my room, I placed my bag down and retrieved Michi's journal. Placing it on the table, I unpacked my bag and set out new clothes to change into. After a well-deserved shower and change of clothes, I sat in front of the journal mentally preparing to be slung into the past yet again. I was smart enough to bookmark the page I left off on. Upon turning the page, I was slung back to the past. Michi awoke from the slumber he had fallen into after the battle with the vicious Skigumo. 2 days later, the small portion of his white hair had spread from the first inch or so of the patch closer to his scalp, now being at least an inch from the root. Michi knew this wasn't a good sign. The villagers had taken care of him while he was unconscious. The men had spent the first day gathering and burning the spider silk, and one had even retrieved his katana for him. The women tended to him by changing the cloth on his head for his fever. Michi sat up and stretched. "Thank you for taking care of me. How long was I down?" he asked, concerned, when the village chief spoke.
"You've been asleep for about 2 full days. We started to wonder if you were poisoned, as your hair turned slightly white as you slept."
All the people listened with bated breath for Michi's response. Michi drew in a breath of fresh air as he stood up. "No, I wasn't poisoned during the fight. I just used a spell too strong for my weakened spiritual power." His voice was calm as he retrieved his things and packed up. The village gathered one last time to see Michi off.
"Thank you so much for taking care of that monster for us," the village leader said, handing him his payment. "This is all we have to donate to the temple."
Michi looked through the bag and took out one of the gold plates and tossed it back, and 3 silver coins, placing them in the leader's hands. "This is more than enough. I don't want you all to be broke just because of me," he said, with a gentleness that filled the village as he turned off the path and began walking
to one of the other villagers he had promised to help on his journey back to the temple. Michi walked for only half a day, where he arrived at a village deep in the woods. He made his way to the inn, and upon entering, he asked the proprietress about the rumors he had heard on his way through. Over half a dozen of the young men disappeared foraging. The middle-aged woman confirmed another three men had gone missing recently, the same as the others. Michi could have chalked up this occurrence to the men getting lost in the woods, if they had been from other villages or foreign to this land, but these young men had been raised here and knew the terrain very well. If you could contact the village leader and have him meet me in the guest room to talk, I would appreciate it. With that, he placed his things in his personal room and headed to the guest room, where he waited for the village leader. An hour or so passed when a man standing about 5'7" with a large build arrived. His arms looked like solid rock, but he sported a gut that told Michi the man liked his sake and meat. "Name Daichi," the man said as he sat down. "Nice to meet you, Daichi. I am Michi, and along my travels, I heard that you've been having a disappearance problem. I'd like to offer my assistance," Michi said as he bowed his head in respect. "I believe a yokai has been stealing these men from the forest, and I'd like to stop it." Michi picked his head up and met Daichi's gaze. Daichi looked over the monk and his nose crinkled a bit.
"How do I know you are a legit monk, and not just a con artist looking to make easy coin?"
His brow furrowed as he spoke with venom. Michi respectfully understood the criticism, and spoke with a calm demeanor as he produced a seal and a piece of paper shaped like a person. He placed the paper down and placed the seal on it. His hand then began glowing as he touched the paper, instantly transforming it into Shikigame that resembled a small wolf. It yawned and then said,
"Yes, what do you want?
Meet my Shikigame, Koroguro." The wolf turned to the guest and looked him in the eye, his bright yellow eyes and pitch black fur pure contrasts of one another. Daichi raised his arms in defeat and his expression softened.
"Sorry, we've been scammed before, almost costing me my position in the village."
With that, Michi returned Kuruguro to his world and packed away the two items. "I understand. I'm here to help. Have the men that go missing all left in the same direction by chance?" Daichi scratched his head as he tried to remember details of the men's disappearance.
"I believe they all went in the same section, but when we sent older men in to look for them, they didn't find any trace of them."
Michi pondered for a moment. "I can't say for sure what yokai this is, as there are multiple possibilities. Can you draw me a map and the way the men traveled?"
Daichi nodded. "Stay here for the night and rest up. I'll draw you that map and bring it to you in the morning."
With that, Daichi left to perform the task, and Michi retired to his room. The next morning, Daichi did as he promised. He would and indeed did deliver the map to Michi. "Thank you, Daichi. With some luck, I should either learn the locations of the men or find out their fates. But at least I'll be able to stop future disappearances." With that said, Michi slung his pack over his shoulder and placed his katana on his hip as he set out to look for something unknown. Michi began walking east into the forest. Nothing unordinary but a faint sweet smell filled the air, almost like a perfume of a fruit-bearing plant. This made Michi suspicious. As he followed the fragrance, he kept his guard up. It took him 10 minutes to find the source. It was a young woman by some foliage near a creek. Her kimono hanged loose from her shoulders. The sight from behind would drive any other man to lust, but Michi was more cautious. He observed from a distance. She had flawless skin and long red hair the color of a rose. She dipped her hand into the water and swished it before she spoke in a gentle tone.
"I know you're there. Why don't you come join me by the creek?"
She looked over her shoulder and Michi couldn't believe his eyes. Her eyes were brilliantly green, like an emerald. They sparkled slightly too. "Are you foreign-born?" he asked, hesitantly, but took a step through the thick brush.
"Yes, I am,"
she said. Her voice almost rang like bells in his ears. She was beautiful beyond compare. Her kimono hung just low enough to expose her ample chest. As he drew closer, the brush had become slightly thicker than before, but that was to be expected. These plants got better nourishment from the creek. "What are you doing out here alone?" he asked, as if he was concerned for her safety. She dropped her kimono all the way down to expose her whole body. A slender frame that would make an hourglass jealous, and pristine skin that any dollmaker would love to make his dolls have.
"I am here to bathe."
Just as she turned to cup some water and poured it over her exposed skin. Michi's senses dulled as a flowery aroma overtook his mind. It's not good for a young woman to be out in the wilderness alone. He continued to advance towards her when he came across what looked like a budding flower pod. Michi went to move the pod, and it exploded with a yellow pollen, and Michi was blinded by the spores. They burned like a million flames in his eyes. He could hear the crackling and snapping of vines as a more demonic feminine voice spoke.
"You men are all the same. You fall for a pretty face and a little show of skin."
Something large hit his torso and launched him across the forest floor. Michi could feel the creek on his left hand, the water flowing down it. He definitely had some cracked ribs this time, but he cupped his hand and splashed his face with some water to rinse the pollen away. He was partially blinded still. "Well, looks like I have no choice." He stood up as a haggard-looking mass of vines approached him. From what he could make out, the bright red hair and facial features resembled the woman from earlier, and he knew it was.
"A damn basho onose."
With that, he hopped back. His vision was only good enough to evade, and extreme close quarters fighting.
"I'll have to use Kurigoro."
As he dodged, a huge vine shot at him. He reached into his pocket and retrieved the paper and seal. He quickly placed the seal on the paper doll and yelled,
"Shokan Kurigoro."
This time, the paper erupted into a black and purple flame, instead of a pocket-sized Kurigoro. Stepping out of the flames, he was roughly twice as large as Michi. Around his neck floated black and purple flames, as well as smoke billowing from his jowls.
"I've been blinded. I hate to ask this of you, but she's the perfect opponent for you to defeat. Please defeat her," he asked, as if he was talking to a god. Kurigoro huffed.
I'll take care of her this time, but you owe me."
Kurigoro dipped his head to the side and slammed into the monster's body with its shoulder, pushing it back a hair. Michi splashed his face repeatedly as he tried to rid his eyes of the pollen. When he finally cleared his eyes of the remaining pollen, he realized that it had a side effect. Colors constantly swamped places, making him disorientated. "Sorry, Kuro. You'll have to handle this one on your own." As he closed his eyes and relied on his other senses to move, Kuro had by now been whipped with three large vines, showing a little blood under his fur.
"Damn you,"
he growled as he inhaled sharp and deeply before expelling a huge amount of black and purple fire. Michi maneuvered around the giant's brawl as he followed the scent he smelled earlier, knowing exactly what it was. The flames burned for only a second on the monster's body before it detached the burning section and discarded it. A new one sprouted instantaneously, and Kurigoro bellowed another column of fire at the monster, this time getting both of its arms.
"Good luck surviving this time."
He chuckled as he spun around, slamming his tail against its head. The head detached with ease and sailed into the forest. The body seemed to move as it regrew more arms and another head. Michi had found the scent's origins and opened his eyes to confirm in front of him was six men naked with a flower like appendage wrapped around their groins and head and a long vine connected to it. Next to six men were withered vines and a small stem with two large leaves extending out from it. Michi began digging and quickly grabbed a handful of cleansing salt from a pouch he concealed in his robes. He exposed the root. He then tossed the salt onto the root before it could let out its unholy scream. The plant withered and died in a blink of an eye. He repeated this step with the other two plants as the fight between Kurigoro and the Bashonose continued. Kurigoro had been billowing out columns of fire as he fought with the yokai, but nothing he did worked. When he heard off in the distance another set of feet approaching. As he looked over, he saw the head he had decapitated had grown its own body. Now it was 2-1, and now he was furious.
Hurry up, Michi. I'm outnumbered.
Kuroguro dodged four vines independently and bellowed out a defensive barrier of his fire in a circle. Michi, understanding the urgency, drew his katana and cut the vines, connecting to the men, and rushed to a mound of vines behind the tree. He tossed the salt onto the mound and quickly struck his katana against a piece of flint, sending a shower of sparks onto the brush, which erupted into flames, exposing the skeletal remains of a woman just before it burnt away into ash. Kuro stayed inside his defensive barrier as the two monsters kept trying to whip their way through. When the vines touched the flames, they simply were incinerated. Kuroguro was about to give up when he heard the thing scream in agony and burst into ash right in front of him.
Took you long enough, Michi,
he said as his body began to become translucent. Michi watched as his Shikigame had reached its limit to be summoned. Thank you, rest well, as Kuroguro faded from sight. Michi waited a minute after he last saw Kuroguro before he threw up, due to the disorientation from the pollen side effects. He closed his eyes and began his trek back to the village. Upon arrival, Michi performed a cleansing on his eyes at their local shrine. With the aid of the local deity, he was able to lead a group of men back to the other six men. He decided to explain what it was that happened when the men had awoken. It had taken 3 days, but he gathered the men that were afflicted by the yokai and gave to the village 6 small pouches of purified salt and handed it to the men. Please, add a pinch of this to each meal for the next month. You are victims of the Bashonose, and it has implanted a seed in your body that, if allowed to grow, will produce a root that could kill anyone who digs it up. The villagers all gasped at this statement, and Michi calmed the calamity that arose. The Bashonose is a yokai born from a young woman being rejected in love and flees to the wilderness where she meets her end. Her rejection is so great that it possesses the foliage and uses it to take revenge on young men. Michi took a breath and continued. They can sculpt the vines into anything they want, including their ideal body, which they use to draw in young men. They then use them to extract their life force till it's extinguished and their seeds are planted. The men's eyes had widened and one spoke. So, if we eat a pinch of this in our meal, it'll get rid of the seeds, right? Michi nodded. Yes, that is sacred purified salt. It will wither the seed till it is no more. The village cheered that the young men returned. Michi smiled and dismissed everyone as he was tired and wanted to return to his room. Like a blink of the eye, I was back in my own body in the present. I wrapped the book up, like always, and decided to relax for a bit and join my group at the bar. I walked down the street that I did earlier with Jane, and the same woman was in the same position as before, leaning on her elbows, her black hair a curtain over one eye, her porcelain white skin still contrasting that black hair. This time, I waved to her as I passed, not wanting to be rude.
Man, was that a mistake?
A grin spread over her face as she placed her palms flat on the windowsill of the third-story window. Her movements were unnatural, like she was missing something. She acted as if she had no legs. She supported her weight on her arms when it dawned on me she wasn't a real person. She was a yokai. Just as I realized my mistake, she dropped from the window with a sickening splat that emanated just from the bushes she just landed in. I began to back up as she crawled out of the brush, a scraping sound accompanied by her hysterical laughter. She spoke.
I thought you saw me earlier. I bet you taste delicious.
She cackled as she moved towards me.
I'm going to devour you and get stronger,
she said as she sped up her crawl, which forced me to run. This was mistake number 2, as she stretched her arms out all the way in front of her like an animal stretching its front legs after waking up, which allowed her to launch her half body towards me.
Bye bye,
she yelled as she produced a long black scythe and swung at me. I turned around just in time to throw up my arm to defend myself and cower when the unexplained happened. I thought I heard the scythe make contact with a distinct metal scraping sound. I opened my eyes to see a tiny kakai blocking the scythe. I followed the blade's curve and realized it had slightly nicked my right side, no more than a standard razor would. I decided to try something in that split second. I made the 9 cuts. Rin, Pyo, To, Sha, Kai, Jin, Retsu, Zai, Zen.
With that, the thing disappeared from sight, and I breathed a sigh of relief. I cluttered the nick real quick with some pressure and a napkin from a nearby store. I then continued to the karaoke bar, where I spent the rest of my night with the group. This concludes Michi's Journey Part 3, but I have some cool notes from the author. Now, these notes are by Carl Brandt, and I think they're fantastic. They give you a bit of a slice of what the author's thinking when they wrote this story, and I really appreciate Carl Brandt sending this through. So here we have some monster notes. Teke Teke, a Japanese urban legend about the ghost of a young woman, or schoolgirl, who fell on a railway line and was cut in half by the oncoming train. Now a vengeful spirit, Onryo, she travels on either her hand or elbows, dragging her upper torso, making a scratching or teke teke sound. If she encounters anyone at night, and the victim is not fast enough, she will slice them in half at the torso, mimicking her own disfigurement. So that was the monster we just heard about that jumped from the window down to Michi. Now Carl has some information on the Bashanose. There is literally no information on this yokai. The only thing I could find was a drawing of it from Konjaku Hyaku Shui, supplement to the 100 demons from the present and the past. So I created my own lore for this one. Hey, nice work, buddy. Good job, Carl. Good to see, by the way, Carl, that it wasn't just me that couldn't find information on the Bashanose. I looked everywhere for that information, and I came down to the same outcome you did. Carl also has some spell notes. Shikigame. Shikigame are conjured beings made alive through a complex conjuring ceremony. Their power is connected to the spiritual force of their master, where, if the invoker is well introduced and has a lot of experience, their shiki can possess animals and even people and manipulate them. But if the invoker is careless, their shikigame may get out of control in time, gaining its own will and consciousness, and can even raid its own master and kill them in revenge. Usually, shikigame are conjured to exercise risky orders for their masters, such as spying, stealing, and enemy tracking. Shikigami are said to be invisible most of the time, but they can be made visible by banding them into small, folded, and artfully cut paper mannequins. There are also shikigami that can show themselves as animals or birds. And lastly, sacred salt. Shubatsu. A cleaning ritual performed by sprinkling salt, or a salt that purifies the area of evil. That seems to be a ceremonial process, I guess you could say, that I think a lot of civilizations share. That's really, really interesting. Might have to do some research on that one myself. So, that is Michi's Journey Part 3. Thank you so much for listening, you lovely people. And if you know someone who loves original, new stories by all kinds of authors, send me to them. Oh, and if you're listening to me via iTunes and have a couple of seconds to swing by my profile and leave a review, I would be so grateful. It doesn't just help me grow, it helps authors like Carl Brandt reach way more people and share brand new authors and storytellers from all over the world. Every day I appreciate what you supporters do for this channel, whether it's listening, liking, subscribing, and reviewing. I am very, very lucky. So thank you so much. And on that note, my awesome listeners, this is the place where stories live, and you telltellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.